Smash cut. Smash cut.
A technique in film where one scene abruptly cuts to another without transition.
Much like a typical conversation with me and my friends when discussing film, television, music, video games, or anything else that happens to come up. This is the idea behind the show, Smash Cuts.
Hello and welcome to, I was about to say Scarlet Pimpernel, hold on. I don't even know why. Whoa. Welcome to the Scarlet Pimpernel. Wow. I'm your host. Hello. Yeah, Percy. Yeah. Hello and welcome to an episode of Smash. Why is it Scarlet Pimpernel? That's so weird. First thing I've ever done. Hello.
Yeah, probably not.
I've done a lot of weird. Hello and welcome to a new episode of Smash Cuts. I'm Rich Caban. With me is Jacqueline Kimmick.
Hello.
And we are in the weekend of Black Panther.
Opening weekend.
Opening weekend. I believe last I saw it was the fifth highest grossing film 3 day on the leap year. I don't even know. I lost track of all the things they added to it, but it's like the fifth highest grossing film with $235 million for the weekend.
That's amazing. That was pretty huge.
I'm not surprised, because besides, you know, the film itself, I mean, besides just what the film means in general, I just thought it was an awesome film. I don't know, we haven't actually talked about what we thought of it, but I loved it. What did you think?
I thought it was amazing. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think that it definitely lived up to the hype, and I think it did what it needed to do. I do think that one of the things that I was most happy about was that it didn't tie so much into the, like, Thanos arc or anything like that, and it really was allowed to breathe and be its own film. And it wasn't like, even though I think Spider-Man Homecoming was great, Spider-Man's a character that we all know so well. It was easy and enjoyable to have Tony Stark really kind of come in and be a mentor and kind of, like, be the comic relief and, you know, things like that. And that didn't happen in Black Panther. That didn't happen in Black Panther, and I was so happy that it didn't. And I didn't really think of going to, but you never know. You know, there might have been something under wraps that they were trying to keep hidden.
Yeah.
You know, even have Bucky's storyline somehow become a big thread through it, which could have been okay, but I'm glad that they didn't. I really thought that the storyline was strong on its own. I loved the actors. I loved the environments. Obviously, everyone is rightfully in awe of all of the costuming.
I'm watching the film, and I keep thinking to myself, wow, that looks like Michonne. But then I'm like, it can't be. I kept saying it can't be because Michonne has such long hair. I can't imagine that she cut off. You know, never even thinking that, oh, maybe on Walking Dead she's wearing a wig. So the whole movie I kept thinking, wow, she looks so much like her. You know, that's all I kept thinking. But she was great in it. But it was, you know what, Black Panther was interesting because it almost felt like the way Thor is its own alien world, like that's kind of how Wakanda felt.
I think that's intentional. You know, I mean, that's exactly what it should be.
Yeah.
And I loved the whole, I don't know if it coined the term, but I do love the embracing of Afrofuturism, where it really is completely science fiction, but also based in awesome African culture, and where they pulled from different countries. And I think one of the things that the costume designer was talking about was saying, you know, one of the biggest struggles or misconceptions is that people think of Africa as one big place, it's a continent, and there's so many different cultures and so many different places. If you go to North Africa, it's completely different from South Africa, or, you know, I mean, it's not, it's not as simple as all that. And to be able to pull from so many different cultures and see so many people different represented, even the actors, you know, so many of the actors were from very poor state, you know, like, oh, what diversity of Black Panther is not diverse. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, I mean, like,
yeah.
It is. Just because so many people have dark skin doesn't mean that they're all from, you know, one place.
I just want to see, I want to see the next movie, the guy with the plate in his mouth is going to be in. That's my only question.
No, I loved Princess Shuri. I thought she was amazing, and that was really the other big win. Not her in particular, although she was, you know, a Leia, another Disney princess, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the dynamic of the men and the women in the movie was not one that was lopsided. It was so well balanced.
Yeah.
And if anything, you know, the women really took lead in quite a lot, even though, you know, they certainly never stepped on any toes as far as you could tell. This was Chadwick Boseman's, you know, he was the lead and everything was good, but I mean,
he was great. You're right. All of the women, like Lupita, I liked her in the movie that she won the Oscar for, but she wasn't as memorable to me as she was in this movie. I mean, she had a lot of great things, you know, great things to do.
Yeah, I think the only one that was a little underdeveloped, and I understand why, was Angela Bassett.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to watch her all day. I'm such a fan. I want her a whole show, and that beautiful headpiece that was 3D printed for her, and oh my God, and when she took it off and you saw her white dreads, and I know I said this when I saw the preview too, and I'm sorry I'm repeating myself on the show, but like, she's the Storm we deserved. You know,
although like now it would the Storm in the comics is married to Black Panther.
Married to Black Panther, I know. And not obviously, not anymore past that. But I mean, seeing her, she's so badass. She commands so much respect, and I believe that she could have been worshipped as a Kenyan goddess and control the elements. I mean, she's so beautiful and strong. But anyway,
I'm
so happy to see her. You know, I feel like whoever cast her, maybe this is just my thought process, but I feel like somebody who cast her might have thought that too and been like, you know what, we're putting you in this Marvel movie, you're gonna be part of Wakanda, because even if you know, you weren't Storm, we're gonna make this happen. I don't know, that could just be my little, you know, fan heart, but
and not against Forrest Whitaker, but he just he stumbled in from the other Star Wars movie, right?
I know, well, I have plenty against Forrest Whitaker. Although I have to say, this is one of the few movies he was fine in, because, you know, he was in it, but it wasn't, he didn't really do a lot, he didn't really talk a lot. I was like, oh, you had to be in this one too, you know?
It's so funny, I saw him on a talk show, was it Stephen Colbert? I don't even remember, where he was talking about, they're asking him what's his favorite thing to watch on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And this is recent. This is literally promoting Black Panther, and he says Star Trek Deep Space Nine, which was such a
out
there answer, but it so fits, because he and Sisko are the actor, I forget the actor's name now, I used to watch that show every week, the lead character from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, they are such the same type of personality. Like, if you ever see the Sisko actor who's James, Avery Brooks. If you ever see Avery Brooks in the interview, there was one he did with William Shatner where he's talking and he's like, acting is music, it's music. And William Shatner's like, what do you mean? It's like, you're being those. You mean like it's flowing, like you're scatting?
Yeah, now you got it. Yes!
You know, and it's so weird. You're like, what is happening to this man? And I just keep giving him a force word to go doing that for hours, going, yes! Yes!
Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely see that. That's hilarious. You know, I'm not a big fan of Forrest Whitaker, but I'm nothing against him, whatever. I just normally don't appreciate his acting choices as much as I would like to.
Like, you could feel the Brando influence. Like, he's just, like, that very old-timey actor. But
yeah.
And then it's Martin Freeman was great in this as
oh yeah.
I loved his setup in the first movie, and then Andy Serkis, who you know, spoilers, I'm sorry, too late to say that, but and when I saw him in this movie, I was like, oh, that's great that they have a villain, you know, for this character, you know, he's interesting backstory, mm-hmm. this character. I didn't expect him not to be the villain for very long, you know.
Yeah, he's not very important. I mean, he is important. He sets up. He's basically like the catalyst for the friction between, you know, our two main heroes and anti-heroes. And again, I think that this is another one of those situations where the storyline itself was improved upon because you could see both sides of it. Not to say that I think the other side was right, you know, but I really do feel like they put a lot of heart in every character, and even the gentleman from Get Out, and I do forget his name at the moment. I'll have to take a look at that.
What you're talking about.
But the lead character from that movie is in this as a kind of council member, you know, tribe leader, and he, you know, understandably is like, you know, I want action. I want something different under a new regime, and especially when you're thinking about something like. King passing and having his son take the mantle, and you do start to think about, like, is this going to be more of the same? Is everybody going to be happy? Is it really, you know,
paradise to have
a dynasty, or is it?
I kind of felt like that when I was watching it. I'm like, you know, the one flaw with all of this is that why wouldn't they help their people, you know, the other people who are so poor? And then they address that in the movie, and it's so interesting because while there you're like, well, why, you know, what's his name takes it to, Michael Jordan takes it to an extreme, but at the same time, I don't fault him for anything that he was thinking, any of his motives. Mm-hmm. It's like, why should you let this kingdom go on when they're not going to do anything for the world or for their people, you know?
Right. No, that's exactly what I mean. Really having solid points on both sides, which is the same kind of well-thought-out attack that Civil War had. You know, you understood Tony's perspective. You understood Cap's perspective. And that's what made it a great conflict. Now, I think that the Civil War conflict, you could kind of be a little bit more even keel on, whereas this Michael B. Jordan's character, like you said, is a little bit more radicalized, so it's easier to say, like, okay, hold your horses.
Yeah,
but
he's
not wrong as far as his train of thought. It's just he took it too far, you know? So,
and it was, you're a product of your childhood when
you're
I mean, unfortunately, no one knew he existed, but at the same time, felt betrayed by his whole family, his whole clan. You know, it's just so. Yeah, it's interesting when you get to his resolution. You don't know how to feel about it because you don't know is it better. Can he exist in this world? Can he be reformed, or you know, have to go? You know, so such a great. It was such a well done. I almost want to say. It's, like, in terms of a Marvel movie, it is a Marvel movie, but it's because it's so inside of itself in this world.
Mm-hmm.
It really is almost like Guardians of the Galaxy in a way, where Guardians could have been its own movie,
never
connected to the Marvel Universe ever, and...
And that's something that I wondered. I actually, not warmed, but kind of talked to even, like, my mom. My mom loves these Marvel movies, you know, everything like that. Rogers is her boyfriend, you know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, I kind of talked to her and was like, you know, it's so good, but it is kind of like its own thing, you know, because I do feel like as much of a plus as it was to have it be its own thing, that might actually throw some people off. And I think it's the same kind of mentality, excuse me, that some people had when Luke Cage came out, where they were like, oh, well, that's, I mean, that looks cool, but that's like, you know, that's like a black thing. And I'm just like, wait, what? No.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, yes, it is. And it should be, and it should be, you know, embraced and, you know, distributed amongst anybody. But it's not only for that. It's inclusive, you know what I mean? Like, it's for everyone who loves that character and who loves just good stories. And that's why... I'm so excited about, you know, things like Luke Cage and Black Panther. And it's so funny that they are superheroes that are, you know, bringing this kind of diversity to the forefront of blockbuster movies and even blockbuster, I would say, you know, TV with Netflix and the Marvel shows and everything. I think it's apt because it's kind of like that larger-than-life depiction of real life and making it approachable for people of all backgrounds. And as silly as it may sound to someone, I really do think that it's a way that it's going to help bridge the gap between people who might not realize that they have more in common than they think.
Yeah.
And it's because depending on where you live and again who you were raised with and all this different stuff, there are so many pockets of the whole world that people are in these little social bubbles just because they're not exposed to anything differently, and that's where all these stereotypes come from, and that's where all of this division comes from, and that's one of the reasons that it's tough to kind of break out of it because it's all they're surrounded with. And I really am excited that something so popular and something so positive is breaking through and creating something that is a diverse hopefully step forward, and that we'll continue to get more of this and people don't just treat it like a marketing ploy, you know, or stunt.
One thing that's really, you know, because I actually hope that people could just not even, like, can just see it as a movie.
Yeah.
And rather than, you know, make it like, you know, I think of Last Temptation of Christ, the Passion of the Christ, right? So many religious people showed up to that movie, and they watched a torture porn, and they didn't even really think about it. You know, they were just so, you know, we have to be there to support, and that's, you know, that's fine for them. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, forget that part of it. Just, this is still a great movie, and it's like that's the thing to celebrate, is that a great movie was made, and the time and the effort was put into it, and the marketing was put in. Well, marketing was put in.
Oh yeah, the marketing was there.
but the fact that this movie was made is great. But it's, I hope that the lesson for everyone is not so much, okay, now we have to do, you know, all Puerto Rican, all this, all that, you know.
Right.
As Puerto Rican person, I'm like, you know, I like colorblind casting almost. I'm like, I love the Star Wars, especially now. I love that Finn is a character and it's not important.
A big deal. Yeah.
Whatever he is. And same thing with what's his name? I can't think of his name all of a sudden. The other character in Star Wars.
Poe?
Poe, yeah. Poe is Puerto Rican for real, but he's not, but it's not important. Now, what's great about this movie is because of where Black Panther comes from, you know, his culture, it is important, but it's, again, it's not important in the way of, only, it could only be about, you know, Africa. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a bigger scale. And that's the only thing I hope that comes out of all of this, is that, you know, everyone can just kind of accept the colorblind casting and not...
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Again, just not making it a marketing stunt, but just having it be an open door, you know, to saying there's so many times that people have not cast, an appropriate ethnicity for a role that's written for a certain ethnicity. Yeah. And because, like, in Aloha, I think that was one of the more recent ones, where, what was it, Emma Stone was cast as someone who's, like, I don't know, Japanese, American, or something. I don't know.
Was she supposed to be Hawaiian or something like that? Or something weird where it's like, clearly you've never been in the sun, you know? It's like...
things like that, where that, you know, that I don't think people do need to be colorblind. That I'm like, if somebody's up for that role, cast that role, if it's relevant to the plot. If it's not relevant to the plot, and most things aren't, you know, most movies, you could really... interchange anyone, and that's great. Do it. Stop making everything look the same. I can't tell you how much I don't care about all of the you know, square-jawed white dudes that all look alike. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And women the same. You know, it's the same kind of thing where it's like, it doesn't have to be a big deal. It just has to be representation.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's what's important. And it was the same thing with Wonder Woman, with female representation and stuff. You know, it's giving everyone a chance to look up to something and have these role models. I'm sure you've seen all the pictures of the little girls dressed up as the warrior class from Wakanda, and it's just so amazing. And again, like, people are already embracing Princess Shuri as a Disney princess and the smartest, you know, woman in the world, basically.
Yeah.
And she's like a 16-year-old, even though she looks older than that in the film, 16-year-old STEM student, you know, and this is one of those things where you're just like, yes, you know, math and science is cool, even for girls, imagine that, kind of big hullabaloo. I don't know if you remember where the sort of breakthrough that LEGO was going to have, like, a female, you know, science set, you know, with, like, female scientists and stuff like that. Which I don't even know if they actually did. I don't think I ever followed up on that story. But I remember that being like, oh, will it be okay? You know, will people buy it? Like, yes! You know, even if you have a little boy who's playing with Legos, having a female scientist in the mix isn't a bad thing.
You know what's so funny about that is, so I took this, we went to Legoland, Crayola, we went to the Crayola place, and on the way there, I took one of those, Jen was talking about those Harvard tests. Have you ever heard of these? I forget what they're called exactly, but they're like these tests that tell you, you know, they go through all of these choices and questions and things, and it basically tells you, are you, you know, do you believe this about gender? Do you believe this about race? Do you believe?
Oh, no, I don't know that one.
It was interesting. So it's a very visual test, and there's a timing to it, and I think, so mine, I took the gender one, and I had to, you know, they give you words, and you have to quickly move words to spaces, but I think the thing is what their timing really is, you know, because then they switch up, like if it says male, female, and then it'll say scientist, architect, you know, homemaker, this or whatever, but and then they switch up the position of where male and female are, and I think it's kind of to trick your mind into choosing what feels natural to you, right?
Yeah.
So I guess the common gender thing would be, you know, the normal should be, it shouldn't matter, it should be neutral.
Right.
The common thing, I guess, is males are dominant in science, and then arts and would you believe mine came up the complete opposite? Like I chose mine came up like, you know, in my bias is that women are the stronger and, you know, and the and the men are like, are not. And I'm like, that's so typical for me. Like, you come up that way.
That's so funny. Well, I mean, honestly, even I don't know how I would react to something like that, especially times, because there have been lots of times where even I realize I have to check my own preconceived notions that are subconscious because of, you know, how I was raised, how people were raised. I was raised with a brother, you know, and we weren't, like, necessarily completely traditional, because I liked blue, too, you know what I mean? And stuff like that, but still, you know, is a girl blue, is a boy, does that, you know what I mean, that kind of thing, where I don't necessarily subscribe to that anymore, but there are still those, like, initial gut reactions that you have when you're faced with something that you don't even realize you're doing. I saw this one experiment people had where they obviously supervised, but they had someone caring for a child that they didn't know, and, you know, trying to get them to play with toys and keep them happy and different things like that. And the children were actually dressed as opposite sexes. So a little boy was dressed as a girl, but you can't tell because it was, you know, young enough that you can't tell.
Yeah.
And and just without even thinking of it, you know, they were giving the little, you know, the perceived little girl, you know, dollies and this, that, and the other, and the boys fire trucks and, you know, like horses. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like the toys that are naturally more masculine were also the ones that were more scientific based, and not even just fire trucks, but like the puzzle games, the block games, like things like that, the building block, things that build motor skills and stuff like that, cognitive function. Those were all somehow subconsciously the boy toys, whereas just like the little ponies or something else were the girl toys. Now, first of all, the children all loved whatever toy you put in front of them, so it didn't. No, they were all happy. But once the people realized, you know, what the test was, they were like, oh my gosh, I didn't even realize. And you're absolutely right. It shouldn't have made sense for me to just grab a dolly just because it was a little girl. You know, they might like a book or a block just as much, you know, and actually learn something. So weird how those little subconscious tweaks kind of get in there and you don't even realize you've been influenced.
Yeah. I don't know, that's funny with Quinn. She plays with so many of Xavier's toys. I think she has one doll that she likes to walk around with, but the doll that she actually clung to is the doll that was Xavier's Cabbage Patch doll.
Oh, that's funny.
She took over and it became her baby doll.
This is mine now.
So it's funny to see the dynamic. But she loves scary things too. Like that's the other funny thing. Like she loves things with teeth, like Count the Counts, or even we have Mario Koopa. You know, that stuffed animal. Like that's, she loves that. Like
that's awesome.
Funny to see the.
That's so awesome. Yeah, no. When I was little, I had some Barbies. I didn't really play with them as much. It was more G.I. Joes. Like I would, my mom would get us like Barbies, and I'd have My Little Ponies, and I love My Little Ponies. Don't get me wrong, but that's because they were perfect steeds for my G.I. Joes.
Yeah.
They were the perfect size to ride into battle. And we had like Dino Riders, which I don't know if you remember those, but those were like automated. Like they would, oh my god, that was the most fun. Like they would rock, and you could have like noises and stuff. And oh my god, I loved them so much. And so, I mean, yeah, like, my G.I. Joes and stuff would raid my Barbies, like that kind of stuff. But I still love stuffed animals and things like that. Dolls, I never, like, full-on, like, baby dolls. I thought they were creepy. Even when I was little, I don't even really remember the story, except it's been told to me so many times, I can never forget it. My mom gave me, like, a really nice, expensive one 1 year. Probably, like, the equivalent to an American Girl doll, you know, nowadays.
Yeah.
And for Christmas, and I got it, and I was like, oh, well, that's okay. I don't want it. You know, thank you. And I was nice about it, and I was giving it, and I was just saying, no, I don't want it. And she was like, but it was really expensive. It's so nice. And I was like, oh, well, you can have it. And she's like, oh my god, are you kidding me right now?
They are creepy.
I don't want that.
Because like Quinn has one, the one that she has, it's in a baby carriage, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's in the hallway. It usually goes untouched, she pushes it around every once in a while. But I come down the hallway and I see that thing from the other end, and it's like those, you know, it reminds me of The Shining. Like it's just a big carriage just looking at me.
I was so jealous of my brother's, like, remote control car. I was like, no, that's not one of those. What are you talking about? And so I got one, which is great. And same thing, like, oh, my God, like, birthdays. There was 1 year, like, a relative from another state just sent, you know, the kids presents, right? And my brother got, like, all this Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stuff. And it was the year that the movie came out. So he got, like, a poster and toys. And I was just like, what? You got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stuff? And I got the equivalent, but all in New Kids on the Block stuff. And I was like,
oh, no.
I don't want any of this.
Oh, no. That's just wrong.
I know.
On so many levels.
Like, oh, my God. I don't want it. And so, of course, we took it, but luckily we were able to take things back. And I was like, I want to teach.
Yeah. Oh my god.
That's amazing. I'm not a lesbian. Such a little boy.
So, but I mean, so my god, what thinking was that? Kids on a block.
Well, again, this is an out of state relative that didn't really know. They're like, they probably went to a store and was like, what's good for boys and girls that are this age? You know what I mean?
No kids on the block.
Yeah. Oh my god, no. you could
yeah,
run the blog.
I know everything about little girls. You know,
I hope they didn't go to a store like that, do you?
But yeah, it's funny that I had been getting Loot Crate and the Star Wars boxes from what's the Bounty Head people? Man, I'm like Alzheimer's today. Those Bounty Head Star Wars dolls. Oh, Pops, is that what it is? Or?
Oh, Pops? Okay, Funko Pops? Okay.
Yeah, Funko Pop.
Bounty Head, what are you talking about?
I know, yeah, no, I sound like such an old man. You know, with the springs, the Bounty Head.
Oh, Bounty, I thought you said Bounty, like Bounty Hunter.
Oh,
like,
Bounty. Yeah, no,
what?
Bounty. But, I guess the Star Wars box is going to end, and then the Loot Crate, I just said, okay, I think it's, you know, there's more stuff here that I'm not interested in that I'm getting.
Mm-hmm.
So just as I thought I'm out of the box business.
It brings me back in.
Yeah, so suddenly, I had gotten this trial thing. It's build the Back to the Future DeLorean.
Oh, that's different.
And it's not full size, but it might as well be, because this thing, when they give the actual size poster, I'm like, oh my god, this thing's really pretty big. But what they do is they send you pieces, and they send you the tools and everything to build it, and then it's like a Back to the Future fan club magazine in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
It has movie and then about the DeLorean stuff. So the first two issues I got for like, I think it was like $3, and it has, you know, all these pieces I'm supposed to put together. And it looks really cool. The one thing I neglected to ask or figure out, it's only $10 a month, so that's not even that bad. But it's how many issues am I going to need before I get to build this car is the question. Because it only 25 years, and I'm like, you know, finally, the left tire, you know, or something like that.
Because that's smart. I mean, how many times I would sign up for something and be like, eh, I don't really want this, and like get rid of it, you know what I mean? And so that's what they need. They need longevity, because even though they're really popular, it's not necessarily sustainable when people are just like, eh, I don't really care. Like you said, like I'm getting less and less that I really want. Because even though, I mean, man, I know that this is definitely not the mindset of everyone, because I have been in retail long enough to sell to collectors that keep collecting, you know, forever.
Yeah,
and I still collect some things, but I really, really slowed my roll. You know what I mean? And I feel like that's part of realizing how much money you're spending on something over the course of 20 years or so. And you're like,
it probably also has to do with... Yeah, you start when you're packing. Like, even just like when you're doing a move and then you have to pack this stuff.
Yes.
And then you realize it's not coming out of the boxes. You know what I mean? Like, it's staying in the box because you don't... I have no room for it. And then when you finally do have room for it, you've got new stuff that you've, you know...
Right.
Yeah.
That's just it. I spent so much money on, like, collector's editions of video games, and I'm so happy that I have them. But to be quite honest, all of those figurines and statues that I got, only, like, two or three of them are on display, like my Uncharted one and my, like, Batman Arkham City, like, the light-up one. But I've got this really great... Metal Gear Revengeance, Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, light thing that's like his sword, but it's got like the electric blue lightning going on. It's one of those kind of things. I've never set it up in my office ever. I don't have any place that it works. Like my house looks like it's from Middle Earth. It doesn't work in my house. it doesn't go. Why am I doing this? I spent more money on those Alien Colonial Marines special edition, even though I knew that the game was going to be bad, just because I'm like, well, it's a cool figurine with the, you know,
Stop it. But the only useful one was that Fallout.
How often do you use it though? I don't use mine ever.
When we first played, I did, but it got so heavy. I'm like, okay, I can't. But I didn't like doing it. But then after a while, I started using the app without the without the control.
Just to
do it. And then I became too lazy for that, and I just started just playing the game straight up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah, I know. But it's Well, there's something I was going to say about Fallout, or...
Well, there's another Fallout box, that's what I thought you were going to say. Like a loot crate for Fallout, where you build the power armor, is that right?
Yeah, you're building the power armor.
That's
cool. Similar to the Back to the Future one, too. I guess that's, just, like you said, that's a smart way to go, because, you know, I it would be really stupid to go all this way and not finish building the DeLorean, you know, cancel it.
Are you gonna do the cool and, you know, necessary thing where you're, like, hanging it from fishing line so that it looks like it's flying in your living room or something?
Oh, that would be cool. You know what, that's not a bad idea. It's like I thought of it. The only thing is, it is big. Like it's poster size. Like think of a. I wish I had the thing in front of me, but they sent a poster of the replica of it, and when I looked at the size, I'm like, wow, I didn't realize it was going to be this big.
Like a 24x36 kind of.
Yeah, let me see. I've got it in front of me. Let me see. This is a 1 to 8 scale. Okay, so what is the measurements on this thing? Here, see? No, I'm just kidding. I don't understand. You can't see this? Why doesn't it have measurements?
Just listen to how big it sounds.
I know. It is. See? No, I know there's measurements somewhere here. But I feel like the fishing line, I'd come downstairs and I would find it in pieces on the floor. It's almost too heavy. And then they send you what they call free gifts, and it's basically it's a base that you put it on. So that you can display the car, and the car lights up, like everything inside lights up.
Oh wow!
The flux capacitor will turn on.
Yeah.
The backlights turn on front. The gull doors will open. You know, it does everything, but you know, me step into this thing and actually use it.
That's funny.
So, and I guess they did it in London. It was a big success. So they already. So that was the other thing too. After I did this, I'm like, well, what if they never finish it? You know, like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But apparently, it's already. You know, it's they already did all of this in London already. So now they're just doing it in America.
Well,
so.
That's good. You know, it's a real thing, and there's an end. There's an end. They're not going to just keep sending you pieces forever and be like, hey, when you're 97, you may begin construction.
Yeah, or the cruel thing would be like some jerk is like, yeah, we'll just send them anything and they'll just try and figure out where it goes, you know.
No.
I took part of my blender and I sent them pieces of that. Yeah.
No. Well, back to films, though. I wanted to mention that I saw The Ritual on Netflix just the other night, and it's like this horror movie that is kind of stereotypical in the fact that there's, you know, a group of guys in outdoors where they're not supposed to be, you know, and something bad happens, you know, things always bad. But there was something different about this one where there were just a few things that kind of added to a little bit of a psychological drama that I just thought was so well done that even though it's not like some masterpiece of a film or anything like that, I feel like I really want to talk it up, but then people are going to watch it and be like, well, that wasn't that good. And I'm like, well, no, I know. Yeah. It was just, there's so much bad horror out there. That I
so
really,
is this a Netflix original?
I think so. Maybe not, but I think so. It's the same guy who apparently directed VHS, which I did not see, so I didn't recognize anything as, you know, me having seen it from his IMDb thing. But anyway, I just, anybody who's interested in, it's a slow burn, you know, it's not like a funny, you know, funny movie or anything like that that's kind of, you know, all gore and all stuff like that, even though it does have some gore in it, it's more of just like a slow horror thing. I think it's almost, when I saw the trailers for It Comes at Night, this is more like what I thought that was going to be. Even though I liked It Comes at Night, or It Only Comes at Night, or It Mostly Comes at Night, mostly.
Yeah.
It comes in, yeah. Mostly. That, I really enjoyed that movie, but it wasn't what I was expecting when I sat down. I had to kind of shift gears and be like, okay, this is totally different. It's amazing, but it's totally different than I thought. Whereas this movie, The Ritual, kind of has that element of where I'm just like, oh no, this is a little bit more on the building path, and you actually, you know, you don't see the monster for most of the film, but you do actually get to see the monster, whereas if you watch If It Comes at Night, you're just like, was there ever a monster?
I don't know. There's so many interesting things that are popping up on Netflix, like you know what that just reminded me of when you said that John Krasinski, Emily Blunt movie that's coming out.
I just saw the trailer for that, like, literally 5 minutes before we called to start this podcast.
Oh,
it looks so good.
Yeah. I feel bad for the kid in the trailer. Like, I've seen two trailers, and each time he's the screw-up that's making making the noise.
God damn it, kid. But he doesn't know. He's hearing it.
Is that what it is? Oh, I didn't even know that. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, no, apparently they're a hearing-impaired family. And that's one of the added elements of suspense. And I don't know if they're, you know, completely deaf, but I do know that, you know, that's a big thing. Like, they have, that there's ASL in the trailer.
Yeah. I wonder if they're involved in the making of this film, the two of them. I mean, it kind of came out of nowhere, but also... you know, husband and wife team, you always wonder, are they also the creatives?
Right. Just much like, you know, Brad and Angelina did that one really weird By the Sea or whatever it was, where they were really involved in it. And it was kind of, did you ever watch that one?
I didn't. That's the one where they got a divorce afterwards. Right?
Yes, but it's almost like you saw the divorce in the movie. And it's like, and even I saw, the only reason I was mentioning that is because I read something that Angelina said about it. And that apparently, you know, she did it because they wanted to do something together because they worked really well together. But in doing it, they were kind of like working through their problems. And she's like, and things came to light. And you know what I mean? It's just kind of like we kind of realized. And I was just like, man, it was uncomfortable. Like, I don't necessarily think that was a good movie, but it's one of those things where you're almost like watching someone's relationship dissolve in front of you. And you're like,
you gotta watch Mr. and Mrs. Smith first and then watch that one as a sequel.
Yes, yeah, I really do think it would probably be a good follow-up. Not a feel-good follow-up, but definitely, you know, and Love Dies, you know, kind of thing.
What was that movie I saw in the movie, I was dragged to see in the movies, was that that movie with Bruce Willis and was it Michelle Pfeiffer? Where it was literally 90 minutes of watching this couple decide they're going to get a divorce.
Oh, wow.
And they're going through therapy, they're doing all this stuff. But the movie was told, like, in flashbacks, like, it's just, or montage. And even the trailer, This Is Us, is that...
I didn't see it.
Yeah, it was like the trailer for the movie always just showed a montage of this family, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm telling you, the trailer was just, that was an extended
That's
version
so
of the
funny.
Movie.
Montage movie.
I'm not enjoying this montage. And the worst part is I have to see that movie over and over again when I work at Showtime. Mm-hmm. It just kept playing.
That's funny.
And I just had a... Yeah, wasn't it a great film?
Well,
speaking
of another great film, I'm sorry, another not great film. I watched a movie I've been avoiding forever just because I was, like, not feeling well. And you know how sometimes things will just be on TV and you're like, that's fine, I don't have the will to change this. And then you start watching it and then it's almost like you're hate watching it, like, this is so bad. This is so bad. This can't be real. And I was watching Something's Got to Give. And it's Diane Keaton and Jack Nicholson and Keanu Reeves. Not Steve Martin.
Where am I thinking? Oh, no, that's the one where she gets naked, right?
Yeah.
Diane Keaton?
Yes.
Yes, okay, I know that one. Okay.
Oh, my God. It's the worst movie. And it's the same kind of Jack Nicholson thing that makes me angry in The Witches of Eastwick, which I also watched for the first time this year, where I'm just like, he's horrible, he's awful, and everything about this character, I mean, I don't know that he's awful in real life. He might be. I don't know. He might not be. He might be very lovely. I have no idea. But in these movies, he's terrible. His character is just the worst. And somehow people magically fall in love with him. And the nice doctor who actually does love her and treats her with respect and is kind of sexy and cool, like, is like, no, I know you need to be with him. And I'm like, what?
You need to suffer your whole life.
And it's just like one of those things. But no, apparently she wants to be with it. It's just one of those things where I feel like somebody wrote it who's shitty and just wants that fantasy of like, but I want the asshole to get the girl because, you know, she wants it really in her heart. And I'm like, that's terrible. Become a better person. Like, you can grow.
You can grow.
You can grow.
Well, that's like that. What's the movie that he won the Oscar for?
The one where
As Good as it Gets, right?
Yeah, As Good as it Gets. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's the Nicholson, you know, conundrum. He just being terrible to everyone. And again, these are his characters. I'm not trying to say he's terrible. But, you know, I feel like if he's not, the agent really doesn't care about what his, perception is.
The one movie that was really good with him was about Schmidt, because through that whole movie, he's just taking it, you know, like there's a lot of ridiculous things happening, and you keep, I think his background or his past helps him in this movie, like acting wise or enjoying the movie, because you're like the whole time you're waiting for him to finally explode, and it just never happens, and it's just such, and it's such a weird.
So it's like falling down with no psychotic episode.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I haven't seen it, I don't know.
Yeah, it's almost like, well, because he's, you know, he's watching his daughter get married, you know, and she's marrying this, she's marrying this family who's clearly, you know, she's better than this, you know what I mean? So you're watching, they're going around just making all of these life mistakes, and you just expect him, you know, like in those movies you're talking about, he's always the guy that's a little drink up, you know, that comes in and tell everybody what to do, but this is the case where he keeps his mouth shut, and you just want, you're like, come on, say something, do something, you know, like, losing, like, especially at the wedding, but.
Oh my God, the person who wrote that was like, well, this is what happens in real life, you just gotta shut up.
Yeah, and suck it in. This is the
terrible
revenge.
Oh God, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it.
That's funny. I thought you were going to say you watched From Justin to Kelly, because that was my wake up from, and I'm like, oh, what's on? What's happening?
I've never seen that one.
Why is everyone doing a musical number, That's the Way I Want It? You know that song? That's the way, I like a big musical number. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Well, you know, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what people do now. Okay, so, go on.
Did you see the trailer for Ready Player One, by the way, the new trailer?
Yeah. It was in Black Panther.
Older one. Oh, that's right, yeah, love Duh. Yeah, you know what's interesting, because did you read the book, or you didn't
read the book? I did, I
still
haven't read the book, I need to get it.
I'm Spielberg, he's an interesting person. I saw the post, which I really liked.
I saw it, I can't wait.
Yeah, it was a good movie, but he is somebody who can pick a project and it could go either way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like a project that's something that someone's looking forward to. And I you know, the first trailer I was like, wow, this is interesting. The second trailer I was hesitant on, and I don't know why. Something about it didn't call to me as much as the original trailer.
Well, it was much more young adult, you know, kind of like thing. But I think that that's fine, because that's what I think this movie's probably going to be. Just from someone who hasn't read the book, I have only the expectation of the trailers. You know.
Yeah.
So I'm just.
I think the book is so good. I'm really curious to see how it's going to play. I read the book. I always ask myself, this could either be a really good movie, or really bad movie, like, because if it's not done, if, first of all, somebody can't get all the rights to these things, and second of all, if it's not done correctly, you know, it could end up being just really bad, but we'll see.
You might have knocked your microphone back or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was only for a second.
Oh, okay. And then, it's a, my feeling on the Oscars, I was always something I was always excited about, and I don't know what happened to me over the last couple of years, but it's just something that I'm like, oh, that's happening.
Yeah.
You know, it's not...
It's, yeah, you need to make a big deal about it, you know, and do, like, your picks and your, you know,
each
other friend that you would kind of, like, wager with.
Yeah, we still do. We've been doing it for over, oh my God, over 20, almost 30 years now. And yeah,
you weren't even born yet.
Exactly. You were 6 years old when we started this. And probably. And then I was just looking at the best pictures, and clearly, we never talked about this, but clearly, what I think should win as best picture is The Shape of Water.
Yeah.
I mean, that's almost the best film out there. But if I had to choose a second film that I would say this should win, I almost feel like Get Out would be the perfect movie to win.
Yeah, well, because it's such
unexpected.
Yeah,
the time is right. Just in terms of the way the film is, it's just such a great, it's not what you think it is.
And has been recognized so much. I mean, I think it is kind of this perfect storm where you kind of wonder if it's the backlash from last year, Oscars so white, you know what I mean? Kind of, look how diverse we are, you know what I mean? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's also really deserving. So it's not just writing that. It's so nice to see Sento films, even with Guillermo del Toro as, you know, someone of color. It's definitely just so nice to see so much diversity out there. I think that the concern was that people, you know, were like, oh, well, now they're just, again, going and pulling as much diversity as they can out of the pool of people. But I'm like, no, these are the ones that are deserving of nominations. So even if that's what they felt like they were doing to try and combat it, it worked out in a fair way, because they still are the films that I think probably should have gotten it. Now, I haven't seen every film that came out this year, so maybe I'm missing something, but I
hope Shape of Water gets a bit of it. Get Out's been on cable, and I watched it the first time, but every time I watch it, it's such a great film, just the way it's done and the style of it, and you know, Jordan being such a fan of, you know, Key and Peele.
Mm-hmm.
And now seeing him break out and do this, you know, Key and Peele was almost like a training ground for him, because they did so many different types of genre.
They really learned a lot in storytelling and different things like that, where, obviously they must have had a background in that just from being comedians, but, like, they would have so many great little mini-movies in that show, and even coming back to characters and again and again, and even in, you know, the movie that they did, you know, what was the kitten movie.
Oh, Keanu, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Even in that, you know, I mean, just more and more experience and how to build things, and not everything has to be a comedy to get the experience from making a comedy, you know what I mean? Like, just that character building and the writing and the pacing and, you know, everything tying together. And it definitely is one of those things where you've heard him talk about how it was like the story that was rattling around in his head forever, you know what I mean? And it gives you hope, because I think most of us creative types have a project. It might not be a movie, but like a project that's been rattling around maybe even since we were little.
Yeah.
And it's just like our thing. It's like, oh, one day I'm going to make that. One day I'm going to do that. One day I'm going to record that. Whatever it is. And it kind of gives you hope to be like, yes! Yes! It can be done! Yeah. And it can be great!
Yeah, exactly. Because it can always go two ways. Like, when that happens is one, it could be the dream project that is the biggest failure because it's been in your head for so long that it's just,
it can be the room.
exactly. Or it could be, you know, like this, mm-hmm. because to me, I'm very impressed with his directing style, yeah. and just, you know, just the pacing of the story and the actual story, the twists, you know, that it mm-hmm. does, because it still you go in, even with knowing, seeing the trailer, you go in thinking it's going to be a certain type of film, but it really is so much smarter than yeah. that, you know. It's just, The other nominees, I haven't seen, there's a few I haven't seen. Like, I didn't see Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet.
Which, I don't really even know what that's about. I know the subject mm-hmm. matter, but I don't really know.
Yeah.
Darkest Hour, I did my best sitting through
that. What's Darkest Hour about? I'm trying to recall
that's
that
the,
one.
That's the Churchill.
Oh, yeah, no, I haven't seen that one.
And it really is interesting. I think I have to watch it on a Sunday afternoon or something, because I don't think it's a, you know, let's start watching this at midnight.
Oh, no, God, you'd be asleep in no time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like Gary Oldman lulled me to sleep with his yeah. voice, you know, then that performance is amazing. Yeah. But now, Dunkirk I saw in the movies when it first
yeah,
came out. Yeah, it was amazing in IMAX. I don't know what, because that felt like part of the gimmick of it. Like, mm-hmm. it was just such the sound.
Yeah, I remember sorry that I didn't go see that one in the theater. There was quite a lull there where I just didn't get to go see anything. And that was yeah. what I was really sorry about.
Yeah, it was definitely an experience. I'll say that. Mm-hmm. Lady Bird, I've heard about it. I've heard it's good. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, I haven't seen that either. I'll watch it. I think it's coming up on Amazon soon.
Is that okay? Greta Gerwig directed mm-hmm. it, so I know that. She's not the star. So
maybe it's not coming up on Amazon soon. Maybe it's just on, like, our watch list or something. Sorry, sometimes I see things when I'm scrolling, and I'm like, oh, that should be coming out soon, and then I realize, I'm like, oh, no, I just add it to a watch list, and now it just shows up on my feed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, teasing me.
Yeah, Amazon started doing that, where they start making you think it's almost
yeah,
ready to download
yeah.
or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's freaking me out.
Yeah.
Although,
it might come out in 6 months.
From when we're recording tonight, tomorrow, so probably by the time this is up, Thor Ragnarok will be available on Amazon, and the Murder on the Orient Express, James said he saw that was coming out tomorrow too, so I'm excited to see those two.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I've seen Thor, but I'm excited to own it and watch it again
yeah.
and again and again.
Yeah, I think I saw. Yeah, exactly. I love that movie. Jen saw Murder on the Orient Express, and she had read the book right before seeing it. She thought it was good, but I think, I don't even know if she had reservations, because I had another friend who really liked it as well, but then there were some people who felt, you know, Kenneth Branagh, you know, he really focused on himself, so I think
he
talked about
that.
Well,
he likes to do that. That's pretty clear.
It was funny hearing him say that he thought this character, the detective character, is the best literary character brought to screen, you know, ever. And when he said that, I didn't realize he was talking about the character he played. You know,
he's got such a big head. I mean, he's amazing. He's incredible. And I used to love him dearly. And I still have a fondness for him, but it's almost like I have a fondness for who I remember him being. You know?
Yeah.
Which is funny because it's not like I know him personally. But, you know, like, I love him from Much Ado About Nothing. You know, I love that version of himself when before I realized he ruined his marriage and broke and Thompson's heart and all this different stuff. No, bastard.
I know, because they were together. They were like in the theater together.
Yeah.
You know,
I know. And it's one of those things that kind of broke my heart, and it makes I still have a soft spot for those old films, but it kind of hardened me to him. Then, you know, again, he just goes on to have this giant ego, you know, and even though he did direct the first Thor, it's kind of funny that they're coming out tomorrow, both those films.
Even though he did direct
the first Thor, I don't know that he was the best choice of a director for that film. It had a strange tone,
You know, and part of it is, I wonder, you know, the Marvel machine is very, you know, they're very controlling, so you wonder if they get somebody to give them freedom, but then they probably take it away just as fast. You know what I mean?
That's why I direct left, right?
And
then he's like, no,
yeah.
I can, no. Too many concessions.
And part of it makes sense because you, when you look at it and you say, okay, well, they're telling a bigger story than just this one film. So in a way, you're like, okay, I could see where this is, that series is a producer's medium rather than, you know, a director coming in and directing his passion project, you know. But it reminds me of that story of Steven Seagal when he's talking to somebody and he said, I just read the greatest script I've ever read in my entire life. And they're like, oh, who wrote it? He said, I did.
You told that story before. It's
like, wow.
Yeah.
I did. It's just amazing. Like, it's like, how can somebody think like that, right?
So
like,
great.
It's so funny as a joke, you know?
Well, before it gets too late, I want to mention that I did get to watch and finish the series Altered Carbon on Netflix as well. So, you know, yay for free stuff, free content. Well, not free, but, you know.
Well, for being subscribers.
But, you know, at a very reasonable price.
Right.
But anyway, and that was really interesting. I absolutely, first of all, love the visuals. The sci-fi element is so well rendered and so immersive that you really are in a great place. It's heavy, it's dense, it's got a lot going on visually and conceptually. I love the themes, I love a lot of the story. It does kind of get away, it's kind of interesting to get into because it's almost like, oh, I'm not sure if I like the execution, and I'm still not a huge fan of the main character, the main actor, and I always forget his name too, but he was in House of Cards. He was the other candidate for presidency in the last season, and he was RoboCop,
he's
in a bunch of stuff now. He's very popular.
Oh, he was RoboCop?
Really?
Oh my goodness, I never even realized that.
Him?
Yeah, it might have been.
Maybe it's the same face syndrome that I have sometimes, and I assign people.
Yeah.
I assign duplicate people to one thing. But anyway, he was in The Killing, which I didn't see, but apparently he was great in that. But anyway, he's fine. I just don't, like, have warm feelings towards him. It's kind of like my Sam Worthington thing, where I'm like, he's fine. It's just I don't care. This was really good. The show was really good. You have to definitely be okay with nudity. There's a lot of nudity. There's like action nudity, not just sex action, although that's there, but there's like, you know, fighting action nudity, which is a lot of fun. And gore is very bloody and you know, violent in a disturbing way. So I would definitely say for mature viewers only. However, the concept of us developing technology to where you can basically download your soul into, like, not necessarily your soul, but, you know, all of your cerebral, you know, self, you know, like the singularity kind of thing, into a little piece of metal or, you know, tech that is basically a little vertebrae in your neck, and you are able to live forever, because you can just take that vertebrae out and place it in a new host, and you kind of can grow clones of yourself if you have money, but if you don't have money, you know, it becomes a whole thing. And they're trying to pass a law, like, right from the get-go, like in the first episode, there's people like saying, like, it should be legal to, you know, spin people up to testify against their murderers and things like that. So it's a whole different element that you never thought of before. And then there's a whole other faction that's like, you know, a religious faction saying, like, no, what humans aren't meant to live long, you know, or that long anyway, like, you're not supposed to be immortal, you know, you lose your soul if you, you know, go into another vessel, you know, stuff like that. So it's really, like I said, the concept is really interesting, and there's a murder mystery going on top of all of this, of course, you know, and, so,
I haven't even seen the trailer. Like, I've seen it advertised on the on Netflix, but I haven't seen any clips or anything. I thought it looked interesting just from
that. Well, I definitely recommend it, but only when the kids are asleep, for sure. That Westworld trailer, though, oh, so good. I can't wait for the Westworld. April 22nd. That was really good. And then we also finished we had a season finale of the new Star Trek, the series, the ABC All Access series, which again is also a paid subscription base, but it is really good. It was Brian Fuller who did things like, you know, Pushing Daisies and Hannibal and stuff. I mean, I just love him to pieces. And so.
Yeah, I'm dying to see it. It's one of those that I have no way to see it right now because I just can't. I can't afford
to see it. No, I mean, everything's an extra money. You know, everything's extra money. I get it.
Yeah, I know.
I was very fortunate that we were in a position that we could. But I think next time I also was like, you know, it'd be really smart to wait until the season's over and then subscribe just for a minute. Like, marathon the season and unsubscribe.
That's
something I would maybe do next time.
That's good thinking. Yeah, I definitely want to see it because, you know, things have been ruined for me, I'm sure, because I've you know, not even on purpose, things have just showed up, you know, like...
I try not to share anything about it because I know so many people didn't subscribe that I know that there's a lot of people out there. Like, I'm not going to give any spoilers out here either, just because I'm like, no, once it's been out for a while and, you know, maybe we can talk about it, but I don't want to ruin it for anybody because it is so good. And there are some great twists in there that you aren't expecting but are so right. You know, and you're just like, oh... Brilliant!
I really am interested because I was such a Star Trek fan. I something about Voyager lost me for a while for Star Trek. I was just watching it on TV, and then Enterprise definitely lost me because I enjoyed the entire season. And you know, I just that show just wasn't there for me. So a question is. Is the timeline of this from the movies or from the original series or its own
thing? Well, it's, as far as I know, it's from the original series, but I don't know that it matters because they have, I mean, those two timelines don't split until, you know, Kirk is a captain. Well, Kirk is, you know.
I think they split when... it actually splits when the Klingons first meet Kirk's father.
Kirk is...
Yeah.
Okay, Kirk is born, so I mean, I guess that would be... I don't know. They haven't addressed it in the show, but that doesn't mean that they haven't answered that somewhere in literature or an interview or something like that. So that I'm not sure. But I mean
it's a lose-lose situation because people will either love it or hate it. Like, it's almost better to be ambiguous.
I think that they're kind of leaving it to where it doesn't matter. Because again, it is the prequel. Yeah. It is, you know, talking about how the Klingon War started with the Federation and you know, from episode one, you know, really, really good. And what is her name? Sonequa Martin.
I did see episode one.
Yeah. Yeah, she's so great. She's also from Walking Dead, you know, and I love Michelle Yeoh so much. I'm so happy to see her in anything. And then of course Doug Jones, who played the Fishman in Shape of Water, is Tim Saru, who is the second in command, and is very good.
I just pictured like randomly knocking on his door, like, and just, he's like, just a minute, and he's just flashing, and then he comes to the door.
No, it's so funny. I love him so much, and I would love to see more of him out of costume, but he's such a great character actor in that way that it's beautiful to see him work in costume as the Pan from Pan's Labyrinth, or the Thrawn from Pan's Labyrinth, and even Abe from Hellboy. You know, I mean, he's got such a talent.
I was like Abe from Abraham Lincoln's story. the musical. No, no, no. Sorry. Yeah, at first they
think. No, his movements are so fluid and interesting. I mean, and he's so tall. I mean, again, but it's just more about his physicality, even though that is impressive. He really does have, a great character in this, and it's nice to see him develop in that way. Because so many times I do feel like it's almost more about the visuals for his performances and less about the dialogue and the character development, and so it's nice to have him really interacting more with the show.
Well, that's where actors, sci-fi really helps actors who, like you think of Babylon 5, like you think of, what's his name? Starts with a G, and I'm
trying to remember
his name. Jakar, thank you.
I
think of that actor, you think of that actor, and you think of the fact that, he gave, his heart and soul to that performance. And, and did such great acting, had such great dialogue, monologues in that show. And where else would that guy ever found that kind of part to be able to do that? Except in a show like that where he's got to wear all this makeup, on his face, but it's still, it's almost great. Anybody can be anything,
It's true, though.
And on that note, right?
Yeah, that works. Wholeheartedly.
Oh, very cool. Well, I think we'll definitely try and record much more because there's going to be a lot of things coming out.
There's a lot coming up for sure.
Yeah, a lot of exciting things. I'm still baffled by the timeline of Wasp and Ant-Man because it's, I don't know
how
the movie's supposed to take place. I did, and Infinity War comes out in May, and Ant-Man and Wasp comes out in July. But when you read about everything in that movie, seems to indicate it takes place right after Civil War. So I'm so curious how that's going to be handled because, with Infinity War coming, I can't imagine, and everybody being affected by whatever's going to happen. And I think it's not a definitive end.
It's a two-parter.
I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so, I think that they have planned out their releases so carefully, they must have a plan. Like, there must be a reason.
Yeah.
Or at least some sort of addressing, even if it's in the interviews before we get the movie, maybe I'll, just address it there. Yeah. But
they're listening to this podcast.
So, I trust them. And even if they do just say, this is a nice little pocket of before, whatever. This is just a side story. We don't need to worry about how it interacts, but.
Yeah, but Kevin Feige comes in the theater and goes, eat your popcorn and shut the hell up.
You get what we give you.
We did this on a dare, so shut up and watch it.
On that note, Wakanda forever.
Yes, very, very much. And I look forward to seeing you again, so very good. And if you haven't seen Black Panther, get out there and go see it. Don't miss it. I saw it in IMAX. I didn't get to see it in 3D.
It was good. We actually bought tickets, and I was at a friend's house, and we were like, let's get tickets. I'll get them early. And I bought us tickets, and because I was talking to friends and at a party I wasn't paying attention, and I got tickets to a theater I don't normally go to, and it wasn't until a couple hours before the movie that I was like, oh my god, this is the theater, and it's a little farther away, not crazy far away, but it ended up looking so much better because I didn't even realize that it was one of those reclining seats theaters, with the actual full leather recliners, not just the foot. And I was just oh my god, I've never been to one of these.
Like a Barker lounge,
it was so nice. I was like, I'm going to come here more often.
Welcome to, I'm telling you, that becomes part of the decision. Though you have to make sure that the movie's going to hold your attention, because I can't tell you how many movies. They might as well give me a blanket and a pillow as well when they tucked me in.
You're practically vertical. Like, well, horizontal. You're practically horizontal.
Yeah,
wait.
Vertical would get me up like, there.
But, if it was a slow one, it might be trouble. But for something like this, it was just really nice.
Well,
I'm about to go get
horizontal. Nice. There you go. Me too.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for listening.
All right. Bye-bye.